You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Visit bpn.fm to discover more.
Hi, this is Dori Berenstein. Welcome back to part two of our adventure behind the curtain with the Prom Music Team. Our guests today are Tony-nominated composer Matthew Sklar, music supervisor, award-winning orchestrator, and co-executive director of ASTEP, Mary Mitchell Campbell, and music director and conductor, Meg Zervoulis. Let's dive back in. I'm thinking about when the cast album was recorded and watching,
so
watching Meg conduct.
Oh my God,
that was like so great.
Meg was a rock star in those sessions.
True rock star.
Truly. I mean, everybody was blown away. I mean, everybody from Sony, you know, everybody was blown away by watching Meg run that room, because we decided that, you know, really we wanted to be in the booth and let Meg just run the session. And she did it brilliantly. And I cannot believe that it was your first
time. I know.
I mean, that's honestly, Meg, it's remarkable to me, because everything was done so efficiently and clearly. And if there was something that needed to be addressed kind of with the clock ticking, you did it, you know, in as
calmly, few
words
quickly
as possible.
Yeah.
And some people panic in that situation. Mm-hmm. And you were cool as a cucumber. And it was just, it was astonishing.
We kept
like smacking each other, like, she's so good.
We were so happy.
Yeah, it was great.
Now she's
really
back cheering.
Yeah, it was really cool.
Well, it's interesting. Talk about how this wasn't, we didn't just take one day and knock out the cast recording. It happened in
phases. Yeah, it was a process, which I think was good.
And
yes.
I think that
it was
for so many reasons worked out great. But, you know, in terms of figuring out when and how and where, and also the music as this was happening was continuing to evolve. You and Chad were
continuing
to work.
Yeah.
And so that adds to the complexity of everything.
Yeah, absolutely.
It was a big puzzle, but
it all worked out. And the album is, I think, really great. I think it turned out really well. I think it represents the show really beautifully. And just the actual performances that we got out of everybody are really strong. So I'm glad that will be there forever. And that's a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
And the cast that you guys got to work with and create music that Beth Lovell could hit out of the stratosphere.
Yeah.
And,
unbelievable.
You know, how you
all of those, all
shape
our,
it around the talent that we had, which was crazy.
Yeah. One take Brooks, right?
One take Brooks.
That's right.
Did he really only do Barry's Going to Prom once?
I think it's that we took
and
the
we did
first
a safety.
One.
Yeah. Yeah. The performance on the album is first take. We did a second one just for safety, but the first one was like electric. And we were like, there it is. We got it. Thank you, Brooks.
Yeah. And I'm thinking about opening night of the Prom.
What a saga.
oh my gosh.
From the vantage point of the three of you, talk to me.
I mean, luckily
about
Matt was a little, I mean, we sort of, I mean, he was.
You guys protected me, I think.
Yeah,
well, first of
a
all,
little bit protected him.
A massive snowstorm.
Yes.
Epic biblical snowstorm.
Yeah, basically that's what happened.
Out of nowhere, a massive snowstorm.
Not predicted, really.
Completely crippled the city in a way that was completely impossible to move. And we learned early on that we were going to have some challenges with some of our musicians getting to the theater in the midst of crippled city status.
New Jersey was basically shut down.
Yeah.
The roads were literally shut down and people couldn't get to New York.
A lot of people who were coming to see the show couldn't come to see
the
show. A lot of friends and family. And
airports were closed.
Meg's family. Your mom
my
made
mom
it.
Made it. Brendan didn't, and your agent.
My agent didn't make it. My parents missed Act One. They took them 5.5 hours to get 27 miles, and they got there at intermission. Thank God, so they were able to enjoy the rest of the night. But oh my God, it was crazy. It was crazy. But these.
Well,
I didn't know exactly what was going on.
We had like a little one of our situations. We had fair warning.
Yeah,
that
or 30 or something.
Yeah, we sort of knew kind of early-ish on that one of our musicians was most likely not going to make it. He threw up the white flag relatively early and said, we're in trouble. And so we scoured around and found a sub to be at the theater ready to go
to sight, play opening
to sight,
night
to sight read
to sight read opening night
to sight read opening night. Sounds really crazy when we talk about
if you look back at that, like, it's amazing that we got through the performance. Mm-hmm. It really is.
And then, but then one of our other players was we just thought that maybe they were gonna make it, and so we didn't really call the sub in early because we thought it was gonna happen. And so what ended up happening was, like, the show started without them.
Yeah, he arrived during Dance With You,
the sub.
Yeah,
and that was because I was texting with the player that was in the traffic jam, and texting literally every Reed player I knew in the city, saying, who lives in Midtown?
During Act One.
This, like, was during Act One.
Next
during
to my mom.
Yeah. See, I didn't know this.
I was next to Meg's mother and Ted's family.
Pretending Ted everything
Arthur.
Was fine.
I was like, I was like, yeah, no, it's great. And I'm like, Ted, madly texting people being like, who do you know? Like, SOS.
I heard you borrowed someone from Mean Girls.
No, I had everyone at Mean. I got everyone at Mean Girls to start texting as well.
Oh,
okay. I had them, like, I was like, scour the city. Like, I need to find a worm body that can come in and play right now, and sight read, like, now.
for opening night of a Broadway musical, and we had no sound guy, so we really couldn't start.
Oh, that's another thing that didn't happen. Our sound person was.
And that was
there.
The reason.
45-minute delay.
45-minute delay. I remember when I finally knew what was happening. I was kind of just walking around calmly because there's nothing I could do. Mm-hmm. And I was walking down the aisle and I saw Mark Shaman sitting on the aisle.
Yep.
And I let him know what was happening. He's like, how are people, how are you so calm right now? I was like, there's nothing literally nothing I can do. And so I was just kind of walking around in a bit of a daze.
Mark Shaman was watching me text as well.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Were you sitting with him?
I was sitting with him as well. I was surrounded by people.
Live theater.
My God. Yeah, it was insane. And, you know, and we started the show, and I knew we were down one Reed player, because we only have two Reed players. So I could tell when we were down one. And then, but I will say, for most of the show, I didn't notice. That because the players came in, especially, you know, I mean, it was, and I don't know how you
Meg's
got through that performance.
Was the biggest rock star ever.
If you can sight read for Isaac Stern and you can get through that performance, you guys can do anything in your lives.
But she was so calm and so, like, and there were some really interesting bumps in the road. Everyone pulled together, I thought.
Yeah, really, they really did. The whole band, during the scenes, like, our associate Ted, who's marvelous, left his room, ran over to the bass room, was teaching the bass player how to play the next song. I mean, it was amazing. And the woodwind player who eventually showed up, who actually used to play with Buddy Rich. I mean, he's like
he
legendary,
amazing
not
player.
Exactly a theater musician, but could, you know, do what we needed him to do. The his section mate, Julie, was kind of teaching him, you know, between every scene, just frantically teaching him the next few charts. I mean, it was heroic. It really was. And
was
we just stayed on the microphone through the whole night. And my mom, I remember after the show, she was like, wasn't that an amazing audience? And it dawned on me that it was such, like, an emergency panic mode that I can't even tell you if the audience clapped that night, because it was just
you were
the
in
most
zone.
Shocking
the audience
experience.
Was
it was
they had no idea.
No,
it
they
was,
had no idea.
It was completely seamless. It was a magnificent night. It sounded incredible.
Yeah,
nobody had
it
any
did.
Clue.
Yeah.
And one thing that was also amazing with the delay is that as we were leaving the theater, the reviews had come out. So we knew that we had gotten great reviews. So it was such a beautiful night, because usually you kind of have to wait. But we were in the theater when they came out, and that was, like, also something I'll never forget.
That was thrilling.
It was so thrilling.
That was really thrilling. Well, everything about that was such a crazy experience.
And I had no idea any of that went on. And, like, for a few weeks, I think. I don't think I read.
We didn't. We told you some of it. We just didn't tell you all of it, because it wasn't really useful.
Yes. And I'm so glad I didn't know.
I was like, I want him to have some fun.
Which, well, I did, and I thank you for that.
But even going back further, I mean, we were in the Longacre Theater, beautiful, magnificent theater, which we cherish and adore. Mm-hmm. But it isn't a house that's known for musicals. And so tell me all about
another thing I stayed out of.
Looking at the pit for the first time and realizing there's no way the orchestra can fit.
We were talking about this yesterday.
Yeah.
I was remembering this conversation, because I showed up with Meg
And yeah, we had a few walkthroughs with Howie.
Yeah, and I remember walking in and I was like, okay, so yeah, this isn't going to work. People were like, well, it has to work. And I was like, I appreciate you and what you're saying.
But this pit is the size of a bathtub. And I'm not. You can't fit 9 players down here.
Yeah, and I'm not trying to be difficult. I'm totally on board with like, we will figure something out, but this isn't going to work. Like, you physically can't do it. Yeah, it was one of those situations. And then we figured it out. It was very creative. There were some very creative solutions that occurred. One of them being the way that Meg's rig is set up, which is my favorite creative solution.
The Lofgren swivel, we call it. It's made by one of the house guys at Longacre. And it's this amazing, very sturdy swivel contraption that the keyboard lives on so that a body could go up to the podium and basically enclose themselves in. It's pretty astounding.
The keyboard actually swivels out.
That's so great.
She climbs in and it swivels back.
Yeah. And we're sitting on the audience floor. So they removed 2 seats from the first row, from row A basically. And that's how we were able to get the extra kind of square footage to make the plan work.
So we ended up with 5 players in the pit. Keyboard 2 is in Meg's dressing room. Mm-hmm. And then drums, bass and guitar have rooms in the basement of the theater.
Well, I'm just so glad they ended up in the building.
Correct. Yes, seriously.
As opposed to somewhere else. Yes.
Yeah.
Because that was a possibility.
Yeah, we were trying to think like, can they be in the, are they going to be in the boxes?
There was no stone left unturned.
Yeah, we were going to figure it out because we had to.
Well, isn't it true when you were conducting the number for prom at the Tony Awards this year that you were conducting from the 4th floor bathroom at Radio City?
Yes, that's the way they
do it. That's how they do it.
And luckily, I had seen her just do that 1 year prior. And to go back to the cast recording thing, yes, that was an amazing experience, but I had just witnessed my mentor doing it 8 months earlier. So I was like, taking notes.
Yes. Right on.
That should be mentioned. But yes, it's conducted in a bathroom and it's glamorous.
Well,
career highlights.
What is there a moment in the creation of the show? Down in Atlanta or subsequently when there was just a number that was really hard for, you know, a variety of reasons to land from your perspective,
I remember always liking the song Unruly Heart very much. It meant a lot to me. But Casey Nicolaw was always felt there was something missing from it. And we went through all of our development process. We went to Atlanta with it, and the song worked. But he said he wanted it to soar and thrill. So while we were doing our lab right before Broadway, we decided, all right, we're going to attack this. We're going to figure this out. We're going to figure this out this morning. So Mary Mitchell and I went downstairs to the rehearsal studio that was a floor below where everybody else was. And we just said, all right, we're going to figure out what this is. And Casey kind of gave us a guideline. He likes to kind of sing what he's thinking in his head. And then you kind of try to make music out of that. And so we kind of got the shape of what he wanted. And we just had to make that work. And Mary Mitchell and I just went back and forth and created that vocal arrangement. And I remember trying it and he's like, almost. Then we went back downstairs. Try it again. Almost. Get it. And then finally we got it. We got the version that's in the show now. And as soon as we got to this big a cappella chord that happens, every single person in the room was just sobbing, including us. Mm-hmm. It was really emotional and we felt like we got it. And finally, Casey was satisfied. And I realized that's what a great director does. You know, he pushes something and he says, it's good, but it needs to be great. And it's not there yet. And I'm not mad at you. I know that this can be better. And so we just put our heads together and we made it happen. And I'm so glad because now that song is really probably my favorite in the show because I think it tells story and it's very emotional and it's reaching our audience in a kind of a profound way. I've been getting, letters on you know, at the theater and through social media about how much that song means to people. And, you know, it's very meaningful. And I think all the work and the back and forth that went into it is ultimately very satisfying because we pushed ourselves. We really pushed ourselves on that one.
We did.
And it was very gratifying now that it's there.
I think it's one of the most satisfying, musically speaking, moments every night for all of us there. Cast, band, crew. I mean, it's just, there's something just, it's a perfect mathematic science moment.
And John Clancy made an amazing orchestration that's so anthemic and beautiful. And we only have 9 players down there. Yeah. And the sound that's coming from that band and from those kids on stage is really astonishing. It's very moving. And, you know, I get goosebumps every time I see it, and I've seen the show a lot, and it without fail, it really always moves me every time.
I remember the first time I heard it, and I was sitting out watching the rehearsal, and I made a note: Kleenex sponsor.
yes, exactly.
Because it was just like overwhelming.
Yeah.
And record-breaking goosebumps too. Absolutely.
It was cool.
And this, the other challenge, 3 bazillion challenges that you guys faced throughout the creation of the show, but this is not a simple score that you guys wrote. It is so complex, and it's different musical styles.
Yeah.
And so having clear voices and how you bring those voices to life in different ways with a very limited orchestra, as brilliant as all those musicians are, must have been ridiculously challenging.
The choice of instrumentation kept us all up for months. I mean, because if you make the wrong choice, you're stuck with it, and you really messed up. So I can't tell you how many versions.
So many versions.
And what, you know, how many scenarios and what's the best one. And, you know, it was so difficult to figure out because of the limitations. And we knew that we understood the limitations and we had to stick to it. But 9 is a very small number for this score because it has to live in 2 worlds. Mm-hmm. But I feel like we did ultimately make the right choices. You know, the 2 trumpets versus 1 trumpet and trombone, I fought for the 2 trumpets, and I think it was the right choice. I wish we could have had a trombone as well, but not having a single trumpet, I think, added a lot to the orchestration
for
the Broadway sound in a way that I think helped us. And we just had to, what's the least... what has the least liabilities? What is the instrument?
But we really played that out. I mean, I think we talked about that stuff for months.
Months.
And hours and hours. I mean, long conversations.
Yeah. And our orchestrators, you know, they probably had different opinions on what it should be, and we finally honed in on it what it was. But it was a long discussion.
But you also found musicians that play so many different instruments.
Yeah.
It's just extraordinary.
And they're very adept at styles.
Yeah. So that's what you have to do on Broadway. You have to be a chameleon of styles because every show is going to be different. It's going to have different, you're going to have to have different,
And we were very careful about the choosing of those people, which was also quite collaborative,
I
think, with us and our musical coordinator, Howie Joins.
Yeah.
Yep. And you got a great group together, and also good people, like really great people.
And such great people that supported the cast recording, Scott Risette
and Scott Farthing. Everybody from Sony Masterworks Broadway, they're amazing. Mm-hmm. And they have great ears, and they really believe in the show. And also we were able to enhance the orchestra for the cast recording. Thank you to you.
Yes.
And I mean, that, if we had our dream, we would have had 15 in the pit. That would have been great. So at least on the cast recording, you know, that that's
the dream lives.
The dream lives. And when we license the show, we're going to license it with 15. Because that's what, you know, because some theaters will be able to accommodate that, and that will be great.
Mm-hmm. And you know, going forward, looking to the future, there's also figuring out what Prom on the Road is from your vantage point, and what that means, and then the movie coming up.
Right.
And potentially new music, which is very exciting. To be determined, and you know, so many other things that, you know, it lives on and will be, you know, owned by schools and universities and cruise ships all over the place forever, which is so great. But before we wrap up on this, I want to talk for a moment about the fact that you all give back so much and do so much beyond the work that you do in the community. Matt was just recognized by the Dramatists Guild with kind of most extraordinary award, so unbelievably deserved, the Frederick Lowe Award, which is given to one composer every year and recognized for your incredible achievement. And that's, you know, voted on by your peers. And
yeah,
so,
that was the best part about that. It came out of nowhere. They sent me an email and it's voted on by the Council of the Dramatists Guild, which is like, you know, you look at that list of people and it's pretty astonishing. So that meant the world to
me. Some of the previous winners, not too shabby.
Yeah, my God. Yeah. No, it's everybody you've ever heard of. It's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you belong on that.
Oh,
very
thanks.
Well deserved.
Oh, thanks.
And Meg, you're also a professor. And you're very involved in arts education and giving back in that way, and that's an amazing thing.
Yeah, right. I took 1.5 years off right now, but I'm an adjunct professor at Montclair University, so I do collegiate kind of music. I was a school teacher for many years, and I do a lot of work with music and autism. So those are my kind of extracurricular, non-musical things.
And the extraordinary work you do, Mary Mitchell, with A-Step is just changes lives all over the world. I'd love for you to talk a little bit about
right.
What
you
do.
I have a second career, which is running a nonprofit called A-Step, which stands acronym for Artists Striving to End Poverty, which is a global nonprofit that uses the arts to work with underserved children in mostly the United States and in the New York City area and Florida. A little bit around the US and then in Africa and India. And so I've been doing that for about almost 15 years, which is crazy.
It's amazing.
It's so amazing. Yeah. It's really extraordinary. And so many people in the Broadway community are involved in supporting
it. We've had lots of Broadway performers go to India or go to Africa or work here in you know, New York City working in a homeless shelter or in the juvenile system. We have a lot of different programs working with a lot of different kids, but basically using the arts as a way of teaching them to imagine going to college and imagine getting out of the cycles that they're in.
So everybody, after you're done listening to this podcast, you have to go to A-Step.
A-Step.org.
A-Step.org and read more about it and make a contribution because it does extraordinary work. So final question for you guys. This has nothing to do with music. I'm just curious. So the prom ends, and we have Trent becoming a school teacher. We have, you know, happiness with a prom happening for Alyssa and Emma. Who knows what's going to happen with Dee Dee and the principal. What is the sequel to prom? What is the sequel to prom that we'll be working on together in just a few years, I'm sure?
Everybody's looking at me. What's the sequel to prom? I think Barry and Dee Dee and Trent write a musical about their experience. And they star in it, and it's called The Prom. I don't know.
Very meta.
Yeah, very meta.
Very meta.
Very
like
meta.
That.
Very meta. I don't know.
I think Dee Dee moves to the town, and she decides to stay.
Yeah, Dee Dee opens a community theater.
She opens a community theater.
Yeah, that's what it
Trent's
is.
Trent's teaching in the high school.
Exactly.
I love it. What happens to Barry?
I think Barry. I hope Barry
calls his mom.
Well, yeah, I want Barry to call his mom, absolutely, and I hope he finds love.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. He deserves it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Well. Thank you guys for being extraordinary. Thank you for being role models to everybody in the community in the work you do, but also the work you do outside the community, and for being just the most extraordinary human beings. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for listening to Deep Dive Broadway, produced by Dori Berenstein, edited by Alan Seals, and special thanks to Bia and Brittany, who were fabulous. You can find me at bpn.fm/deepdivebroadway. My Instagram is dori.berenstein, which is B-E-R-I-N-S-T-E-I-N. Please subscribe and leave lots of fabulous comments, and check out my website at dramaticforces.com.
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the RISE Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RISETHEATRE.org, because only together we rise.